The Dolo White Podcast is brought to you by Cinema Anywhere Nashville. Follow Cinema Anywhere Nashville on Instagram and book your indoor or outdoor cinema experience today.
Hey, it's Dolo White, and this is the Dolo White Podcast. As you can hear from my voice, I'm a little bit under the weather. I took one too many coughs and sneezes to the face from my daughter over the weekend, and here we are, sick as fuck. Having said that, I've got a podcast to give you. My guest today is Annie Duke, author of the new book, Quit, The Power of Knowing When to Walk Away. I have the power of knowing when to walk away from this intro because I'm not feeling well. So we're just going to get right to the podcast and I'm going to quit this intro. Welcome to the Dolo White Podcast.
Polo Gini. Live.
Yeah. What's up?
This is not live. It's completely recorded.
Broadcasting from one of the top recording studios in all of Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, that's not true at all. I'm probably at home doing this.
He's been called one of the greatest thinkers of his time.
Literally no one has ever called me that. I do kind of agree with it, though.
Right here. A 2017 recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize.
That's just a flat-out lie.
Talking politics, community, race, religion, entertainment, sports, and whatever the fuck else.
Yeah.
It's the Dolo White Podcast.
All right, episode 92 now of the Dolo White Podcast. My guest today, author of the new book, Quit, The Power of Knowing When to Walk Away, Annie Duke. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
So I think the American way, the mindset that we all grew up with is the opposite of what your book's about. We're told never to quit. Winners don't quit. And you wrote a whole book about quitting, which I think is pretty cool because if something doesn't serve you, if it's not for you, you shouldn't be doing it.
Well, that's exactly right. Look, it's true that like with kids, sometimes they can't really see what the reward at the end of something really hard is. And so we really try to instill this idea of grit in them. Like you got to stick to things that's going to build character. Even if something is hard, you shouldn't quit it. And I think we carry that into adulthood thinking that the bigger problem for adults is that we don't stick to things enough. But decades and decades of science shows that that's not true. Actually, we stick to things too long and in general. And you can tell that because let me ask you this, like, you know, when you've like quit jobs or maybe you've, ended a relationship or shut down a project or whatever it is, don't you kind of look back always and say, oh, you know, I should have done that sooner.
I'm glad I got out of there. Yes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And what that means is if you're saying all the time, I should have done that sooner, it means that it's not like we're just, you know, willy-nilly just quitting things for no reason, that we tend to stick too long trying to be sure that quitting is the right choice. Because like, if I call you a quitter, I'm calling you a loser. Mm. And so who wants to be a quitter? And so, and we're told that from when we're young, you know, like just stick to things, stick to things. So we think we're going to be judged as someone who can't hack it if we walk away. Meanwhile, we get stuck in like toxic relationships and dead end jobs and projects that are failing or we keep climbing a mountain in a snowstorm and, you know, we end up perishing because we won't quit.
And it's all, societal influences, right? Like it's all like if you're in an unhappy marriage or a bad marriage, you have to stay married because divorce is bad. If you have to make X amount of dollars, so you have to stay in this job, that's bad. You know what I mean? And it's all like kind of societal pressure that's telling us you can't walk away, but in actuality, you can and probably should walk away in many instances.
Well, you know, I think that what we sort of think is like, you know, if you stick to things, you'll succeed. Mm. I mean, I kind of think that that's the way that we think about it, but that's not true. It's that if you succeed at something, you will have stuck to it. So I know that doesn't sound like a difference, but it's a really big difference, right? Like if I become really successful in my career, or I have a really successful marriage, or I end up in professional sports or whatever it means, obviously I would have stuck to it. But that doesn't mean that if I stick to playing basketball and I'm bad at it, that I'm going to succeed. It doesn't mean that if I'm on a relationship where I want it to be monogamous and my partner isn't faithful to me, no matter how many times we go to kid therapy or how many times we talk about it, and it's making me deeply unhappy, that doesn't mean that's going to end up being a successful relationship just because I'm sticking to it. Mm. Right? Like that's the thing that we have to realize is what works in retrospect doesn't work prospectively. And if we really want to be successful, what we have to do is stick to the stuff that's working and quit everything else. Because when you're sticking to something that isn't working, then that prevents you from going and doing the stuff that is working.
You're and basically so, wasting time at that point, right?
That is exactly right. So this fear we have of like, what will it mean? Like, I'll have wasted all of my time if I quit, or it mean I'm a failure, or that I can't hack it, or that I'm a loser, causes us to waste all of this time when we have such a short time on this planet to actually find happiness.
Yeah. And you use great examples in your book. Like, I know there's Muhammad Ali was one of them who stuck around a little too long. Those last, I think, was the last couple fights, or was it the very?
No, it was like the last 7 years. It was. Oh, he actually stuck around. Oh, right. So Muhammad Ali is a great example of why grit is good, but why also quit is good too. Yes. So, you know, he won the title as Cassius Clay against Sonny Liston. We all kind of know that part of the story, but then he was stripped of his title because he became Muhammad Ali. Was a conscientious objector to the Vietnam War, and so wasn't allowed to fight. And that went on for like a good 4 years. Then when he did finally get the right to fight again, he obviously no longer had the heavyweight title. They didn't give it back to him and he had to earn it. That took him about 4 years because you have to work your way up to a title fight. So even though he was Muhammad Ali, they weren't like, oh, we're just going to give you a fight. Right. He still had to get there. That took another 4 years. By then he's in his early 30s. You know, it was just pretty old for a fighter.
Yes.
And nobody thought he could do it. He got a title fight against George Foreman, who, I mean, he was humongous and also just knocked people out in like one punch in the first round. So everybody thought Muhammad Ali was going to lose. But, you know, sometimes when you're sticking to things, when you're gritting it out through these things that look really difficult, you really do see something that other people don't see. And so I think this is the case for Muhammad Ali. He obviously wins, but he changes his strategy. He used to be like, you know, float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. But now he's leaning against the ropes, just letting George Foreman pummel him until George Foreman tires himself out.
Yeah.
And Ali ends up winning the fight. So then what happens after that is where you start to see the shift from like, if you're gritty, that's great, unless the thing you're doing is something that you shouldn't stick to anymore. Right. Mm. Unless it's not that you see something the world doesn't see. It's that the world is right and you really need to walk away. So he continues to fight, but now there's clear signs of physiological damage, right? Like his kidneys are looking really bad. He's starting to show signs of neurological damage. So Teddy Brenner, who was the promoter at Madison Square Garden, told him, you really need to walk away. Like you have to quit. This is bad. You're starting to get physical damage, neurological damage. Ali refuses. He says, no, I'm going to keep fighting. So Teddy Brenner actually quit.
Wow.
And said, I'm not going to host your fights anymore. So then a little bit later, Ferdy Pacheco, who was his fight doctor, says, you know, there's really bad irreversible damage occurring. So you need to quit. Ali didn't listen to him either. And he kept going. So Ferdy Pacheco quit him.
Wow.
Now what happens is that he's like having trouble getting licensed in a whole bunch of places. He finally gets a fight against Larry Holmes. Larry Holmes beats him up so badly that Larry Holmes cries after the bout.
I remember seeing highlights of that. Yeah,
which is like so awful, right? Then he can't even get licensed in America anymore. He goes and fights in the Philippines. And like, you know, I mean, it's just, it's horrible with like this, they have a cowbell and you know, they're having to share gloves between, I mean, it's just a mess. And, you know, and this was going on for 7 years, you know, when people were saying to him, you know, you really need to stop. And he didn't listen. We know what happened to him. It was tragic.
Yeah. And you have other tales of people who didn't quit in your book as well. Muhammad Ali being probably the most famous one, considering he is, you know, at one point was the most famous person in the world, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I think that's probably true.
Yeah. But you have other people that climbed with, is it Everest, that probably should have saw the signs and didn't turn around and didn't make it. Basically.
Well, so what I think is interesting about Everest is that, you know, we think about Everest as such a gritty task, right? Like you got to climb 29,000 feet in the air. It's pretty hard to do.
Yeah.
So only really gritty people do it. And we have all of these stories like from Into Thin Air, the movie Everest, people who continued up even when the conditions were really bad to continue and obviously ended up perishing or putting themselves in grave danger. What I think is really interesting, though, is that there's this cool story of this guy's Dr. Stuart Hutchinson, John Tasky, and Dr. Lou Kosciuszko. And they were three people who were part of one of these climbing expeditions, you know, that were super popular in the 90s and beyond. Eight climbers and three climbing Sherpas and an expedition leader. And on Everest, they actually set something called the turnaround time, which basically is like, imagine you're leaving on summit day Basically, the turnaround time is just no matter where you are in the mountain, if you haven't reached the summit by 1 p.m., you have to turn around. And the reason why they set that is because you don't want to descend in darkness. It's very, very dangerous to descend in darkness. So that turnaround time is meant to stop you from descending from the summit in darkness. So they're going up for summit day. There's a traffic jam on the mountain because remember, Everest expeditions are like super popular at this point. So there's a traffic jam. And their expedition leader comes up by them and they say, and Hutchinson says, how long is it going to be till we get to the summit? And he says, 3 hours. So Hutchinson holds Taskin and Kosicki back and says, you know, it's already 11:30. So we're not going to make it to the summit by 2:30. We really should turn around now. Took a little bit of convincing, but they did. Now, I'm sure it's obvious to you why you don't know this story.
Right.
Right. Like, oh, there were three people who tried to climb Everest. They followed the rules. They turned around. They lived. It doesn't feel very dramatic or heroic, except that that book Into Thin Air, which is about the disastrous year where Rob Hall and Doug Hansen died on top of the mountain, they were in Rob Hall's expedition.
Oh, wow.
The expedition leader who told them that it was 3 hours to the top of the mountain was Rob Hall, who arrived at the top of the mountain at 2 p.m. He's a pretty fast climber, but still an hour past the turnaround time. And he waited until 4 p.m. for Doug Hansen to arrive, which was 3 hours after the turnaround time. And they died on top of the mountain. Many, you know, many people perished and many people were gravely injured because they didn't follow the turnaround time. So you might say to yourself, well, wait a minute, hold on. Like, I read that book. I saw that movie. Like, why didn't they tell the story of these three people? And the answer is they did. John Krakauer, who wrote the book, said they were the best decision makers on the mountain that day. But that shows you the problem with quitting. Like, they're totally invisible to us because the quitters aren't the heroes of their story, even if they should be. Like, obviously, these people are heroes, right? But we don't think of them as that. It's boring.
What's wild is I think there's a bit of an understanding where, like, if I book a trip halfway around the world to climb this mountain and you spend the money, you do the prep, you train, you do all of these things and you get there and you can't do it. I think people understand that as to, like, why they decided to break these rules and perish, you know?
That's exactly right. So this is like such an important fallacy, like a bias that we fall into. And the bias is that we take into account what we've already spent on an endeavor. That could be effort or time, attention, money, in deciding whether to continue and go on, right? So think about it this way. Like, I can do it because this is the Everest problem, right? So imagine that there was some band that was playing in your town and it was like the day of, and there's still tickets on sale, but it's like freezing cold and rainy and the concert is outdoors. Would you buy a ticket that day to go see the band?
I'm not going to buy that ticket. No.
Right. Yeah. But what if you had bought the ticket 3 weeks earlier for $100?
Then you consider it. Yeah. I'm one of those people that would be like, yeah, I'm not doing that. It's cold and rainy, but I'll make
this. But it's hard, right? What if you had spent $500
on it? Ooh, that might make a little bit of a difference.
Right? $1,000 on the ticket. Yeah. You're totally going, right?
Yeah.
So this is the Everest problem, right? So look, if you decide that it's too cold and miserable to go, you know, that day, and you wouldn't purchase the ticket that day, or if someone offered you a free ticket, you wouldn't go, then you shouldn't go just because you already spent $100 on the ticket, because you already spent that money. What matters is, you know, am I going to be happy doing the thing that I'm going to do? Like, life's really short, right? Like, let's spend it on things that give us joy, not standing in the freezing cold. But what happens is we say, I don't want to waste the ticket. I don't want to waste the money that I spent on the ticket. But what does that do? That causes you to waste time being miserable. So if you think about Everest, like, just as you said, you all that effort to get there, all the training, all the money that you spent on the expedition, and now you're 300 feet from the summit, are you going to turn around? Doesn't it feel like all of that was a waste? Except if going on is going to make you die, obviously.
It's not worth it.
And I think this is really important, is that we think about the people who stick to it, like persevere through those things as the heroes, right?
Yeah.
As the ones who are heroic, and quitting is cowardly. Except, you know what? Isn't quitting in that situation the heroic move? Because you have to give up on you have to say, it's okay that I spent $70,000 for this expedition and I've climbed 29,000 feet in the air and people are all going to think I'm a loser for turning around, but I know this is the right decision.
Right.
That's, I get home that's and see a my, heroic move.
Yeah. I get home to see my family. If you have kids, your kids depend on you. They need you there more than they need you at the summit of Everest.
You know what? Ken Kamler, who was a doctor on Everest, said to me just that. He said, people forget that the goal isn't to get to the top. It's to get back down to the bottom.
Yes, that is true. Yes. Right. That's an excellent point when you think about it. My final question before I let you out of here is, what is the biggest mistake? I know people stay too long, but what do you think the thought process is of why they stay too long just to... I think that also like makes people not want to quit. Like if I wanted to quit year one and it's year five and I still haven't quit yet, then it's like I wasted 4 years. Is that kind of the
Yeah. So the problem is the way that it snowballs on itself, right? So you're doing something for a year, then you're sort of thinking about quitting it, but you're like, I don't want to have wasted all of my time that I spent on this. That makes you stay longer. And then now you're accumulating more of these sunk costs, right? And then the next time you come to the decision, it's like, but now it's 2 years. And then now it's 3 years. And then now it's 4 years. And we find ourselves, and I'm sure you have friends like this who have been in like relationships where they just come to you constantly telling you how unhappy they are, but they won't leave because of all the time they've put into it. And then that makes them stay. And then that makes them put more time into it. And it just becomes this incredibly vicious cycle.
Totally agree with that. Annie Duke, you are great. I would love to talk to you all day. The book is Quit, The Power of Knowing When to Walk Away. Get it and don't stay too long doing something you're not happy doing. It's not worth it. If we've learned one thing today, it is definitely not worth it. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Cinema Anywhere Nashville. You can book your indoor or outdoor cinema experience right now, starting at only $350. Cinema Anywhere Nashville provides your choice of a 16, 24, 36, or even 100-foot screen plus projector setup and sound system. This is a super dope service that wouldn't just be great for corporate and work events, but also birthday and holiday parties, or if you want to have a romantic evening with your significant other, Cinema Anywhere Nashville is perfect for all of those things. They have the right experience for you. Follow them on Instagram right now at Cinema Anywhere Nashville and book your cinema experience today.
I want to say thank you once again to my guest, Annie Duke. Make sure you get her book, Quit, The Power of Knowing When to Walk Away, and whatever it is you're doing, if you feel like quitting, just remember, it's okay to quit. I'm about to quit right now because my time is up on this podcast. Make sure you're following me on all platforms, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, everything, at DoleWhite101, DoleWhite101. And remember, no matter what platform you are listening to this podcast on, make sure you rate, review, say some nice things, and subscribe, follow, whatever it is they call it on that particular platform, all right? Definitely appreciate you checking out the podcast this week. Brand new episode next week. My guest is going to be Steve Phillips, who wrote the book How We Win the Civil War. Dope episode. Check that out next week. And that's all I have to say. I'm gone.